Wow, what a nice thing to have that song this morning. That song came out when I was 16. And yeah, so you got the math. And it makes sense that so many of us have a certain orientation toward life because of that era of music. Cat Stevens just brought us the most wonderful things. He brought us the Peace Train and that song. And that era has guided us even more than I sometimes think about because it's so deeply ingrained. So those of you of a certain age, if I ask you, war, what is it good for? What would you say? Absolutely nothing. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Y'all did that so well. So there we go. Let's start from there. Why don't we? Today I'm talking about claiming your purpose. And what's really lovely is I know so many of you well. And I know that you're living your purpose. I've watched you as you've come into your own in claiming your purpose. So today's talk can either be an affirmation of what you're already living, or it can be a little push, a little nudge toward discovering the next thing. And what I want to say about this is that claiming your purpose is not a one-time deal, and then you're done. Your purpose is a fluid, it's a fluid thing. It takes on different facets. It takes on different aspects. It has different ways of expressing itself. So just because you have identified what your life's purpose is, know that there are many streams for that to take, as we heard this morning, many ways to kiss the ground. And I wore jeans for you, so we're good. So this is an affirmation right up front. You all know this. You've heard me say this. You practice this. That everyone has a divine purpose uniquely built for exactly you. Nobody else can do it the way you do it. So let's establish that ground first. That's where we begin. So I don't have to teach you about that. I don't have to tell you that you need to keep looking so you can hear God. You know to listen for God. At least I'm assuming that you know that. If you've been sitting here all this time and you're not doing that, well, you fooled me. So we're going to start from that place. And claiming our purpose gives us a little bit of juice for our lives. It gives us a reason to get up in the morning to not hit that snooze button, like the reading says. Now, are you on purpose every single day all the time? No, you're not. But it is the base, the beacon that we keep returning to. So I'd like to share with you just kind of a little fanciful thing about how we get to that. It comes before you're born, the product of lives before and lives refined. It rests, nestled in the deep of you. Tender and powerful, shaped by what was and what is to be. It waits. Subtle nudges as you grow. Pushed down by parents and other kids and bullies and cultures and falling towers and crashing hopes and all those dreams extinguished in a moment by anything, especially your newly formed gift of doubt. It stays, battered by questions. What do you want to be when you grow up? What's your SAT score? What's your ambition? What's your career? What personality type are you? What color is your parachute? Who moved your cheese? Is your laundry white enough, and is your deodorant doing its job? And more questions. What is your IQ? What's your emotional intelligence? What are you passionate about? That hum, that longing, that seeking that's never in the places and people where it should be. Dang it. And you hold it down until you think it's quiet. quiet at last. So you think you've silenced that soliloquy, don't you? But then you hear it again, so familiar and constant that you've stopped listening to its beauty. That aching too dear and too near and quietly demanding that you dance with it. And just then, on a Tuesday, let's say, someone says, "Hey, I saw what you did there. Nice." Or, "Wow, you have a gift." Or, "Thanks, I feel better because of what you did." Or, "You should do more of that." And you say, "It's nothing." It is. Or you say, "Doesn't everyone do that?" They don't. Or, "I've always done that." Of course you have. And yet, wings light as breath begin to flutter inside you, and it feels like excitement, fear, wonder, anxiety, sunrise. And you hear that ancient, tender thing inside you as it rubs its hands into a flame and fires up the forge, and you say, wait, I'm busy. I'm afraid. I can't do that. I don't have time. I have kids to raise. I have vacations to take. I have retirement to enjoy. I don't have the 7 habits of highly effective people." And that ancient, tender, demanding, relentless, beautiful thing says, "No, beloved, let's get the real work going. You've been doing a good job getting to this moment. We've got all the tools right here. You've always had what you needed. But thanks for saying yes anyway. So now let's make a child smile. Let's bring someone a meal. Let's pray some more. Let's move some mountains. Let's transform the world." And you say, "Okay, I'm in." And that's the way it goes. And your tender, tender heart opens up and it can't ever be shut again. And you discover that that thing that you took for granted because it came so naturally is the gift. Because it came so naturally. And so you begin the healing, transformative work with yourself and with other people. And suddenly there's a whole new set of challenges that appear. You have to clean up your psycho-spiritual act. You have to break the habit of looking all those other places for things that aren't there. You have to quit looking for things everywhere else except in here, because that's where it is. And so you begin to hone your skills, and you take classes, and you ring a bell or a chime. You light some incense, or you take a walk. And you identify that thing which was always there, behind the scenes, coming out in little ways all the time throughout your life, and you begin to pare down the unnecessary to bring out the core of that beautiful thing inside you. And you'll find yourself wanting to compare it to everybody else. "Oh, their gift is so much better." No, their gift is just who they are, just like your gift is who you are. There is no gift that is too small, too insignificant, or any less necessary than anybody else's. So your gift might be to stay with your grandchildren and make sure that you're filling in the gaps with your maturity and your wisdom and your experience so that they have a more rounded idea of what life is about, and they know that that love that can only come from a grandparent. And you discover that maybe those meals that you prepare and take to others, that is a gift all unto itself. And maybe those words that you write in private are a gift to somebody else at exactly the right time in exactly the right way. You might discover that you're bendy like a pretzel and you can do yoga into your 80s. Bendy like a pretzel. You might discover that you have a leadership role that you never wanted to practice because it's too much like the corporate world, but it's really not. Your leadership role among other humans with this particular focus adds a depth to them and to you that you might not have ever experienced before. You see, it's too easy for us. We are bright spirits. We are bright spirits like a firefly in a jar. Our light doesn't shine any less brightly inside the jar than outside the jar, but we're kind of wearing a jar for this life, aren't we? We have this flesh that binds us here, but we have that unique dimension in that, oh man, I'm taking this metaphor way too far, and that our jar is permeable. The light gets in and the light gets out, and we get to go out there and experience things beyond ourselves that free us from this solid container that we're in that's mostly water. And so here we are in this human form, and it's easy for us to get crystallized. It's easy for us to get solidified in a way that keeps us from being able to expand. And rather than being like a rock, we have to be like water. And it requires that we get used to the habit of chipping away the solid parts so that we can continue to be fluid and permeable and malleable and young and fresh, because that little voice, that little urge inside you that's been there since before you were born is constant. That's God. That is Spirit. It's always there. It doesn't age. It just waits for us to catch up. And so no matter where you are in your life, no matter what you're saying yes to right now, know that down the road there'll be another yes. And it'll stretch you out a little bit, and you'll think you're a little bit uncomfortable. When I first came into Unity back in 87, you maybe have heard this story before, my minister, Reverend Linda Pendergrass, made an announcement one day in church that she and one of her classmates from ministerial school, they'd been working out this model for women to pray together. It was called Holy Women, and it was 12 women who came together by divine appointment to pray with each other. It's kind of like mastermind, except more expanded. And she said, somebody out there is the leader of a Holy Women group here in our church, and you just need to let me know if it's you. And I had only been in the church about 6 months, and I heard this little thing inside me that reminded me of when I was a smart kid in school going, oh, me, I know the answer. Except I was like, no, you don't. That's not you. Just stop it. Do not put your hand up. Do not go talk to her after church and say you think you're the one. Don't do it. And I did. And it taught me how to pray out loud with other people way before I thought I was ready for it. I don't have enough training. I don't have the 7 habits. My parachute's not the right color. I don't know enough about this to be holy. Silly. I got holy before I knew it. And I practiced it with those women. And I'm still in touch with them. That was 35 years ago. But I've also had some missteps along the way, and it seems like it's only fair to share that with you. When I finished my ministry, my first ministry with Linda, I came to Linda here in Austin to be her associate minister right out of ministerial school, and I served 2 years with her, and I was tired of learning with Linda at that point. And those of you who know Linda might understand why that was true. She was the best teacher I've ever had. Her voice still guides me in my work. Because as many things that she had going on in her life and in her personality, she was solid with spirit. Solid. And so I finished my ministry with her, and I had just started dating my husband, Bill, and I was asking myself the question, and other people were asking me the question, what are you going to do now? And I said, oh, I want to run a retreat center. I want to open up a retreat center and run it. Yep. And Bill, it was commercial real estate businessman, he said, oh, have you got a facility? Have you got a property? Have you got backers? Have you got investors? Have you got a business plan? I'm like, well, no. I don't have any of those things. But that was my calling. That was my next purpose in life. Because I had led retreats while I was teaching in a Catholic school from 7th grade through 12th grade, leading those children on retreats, and I loved it. And the work that I did during ministerial school in those first 2 years of ministry, I got familiar with a lot of different retreat centers and how they worked and what they did, because I did not want to be a pulpit minister. I'm just going to take a drink of water right about now. Nope, couldn't do that every Sunday. Didn't want to deal with all those people all the time. See what I did there? That didn't feel like that was my purpose. But you see, when you get off on the path that way, when you start heading that way, that's not a wrong path. That's just a little detour. This is, go ahead, check it out. Well, I couldn't answer those questions about running a business. And it was a great idea. But it was one of those things where you have to find out what it's not, but so that you can find out what it is. And that's where it took me. And then I went to San Angelo as a pulpit minister to help those people in between ministers for almost a year. And I got to experience what I talked to you about a few weeks ago, the beautiful people of West Texas working in really a different culture than here in Central Texas. So I got to work with that. I got to experience what it was like to live in the weather of West Texas. The wind, the constant wind, the tornado, everything. And it grew me. And it led me back to pulpit ministry. And it was, okay, I guess I'll give this a go and see what happens. Oh, sorry, wait, I have to have babies. So I did, and I went, oh, okay. Now I know what it feels like to grow extra hearts inside my chest. Now I know what it feels like to love that way. Now I know what it feels like to have the humble feeling that maybe one of the main reasons that I came to earth is so they could get here. Wow. That puts everything in perspective, doesn't it? And I got to tell you that my kids were and are, he's not in the room, is he? Need to have a word, Alex. They were and they still are touch points for what I do right here. They keep me real. They keep me young. They keep me honest. They keep me interested. They keep me alive. And yes, I'm pretty sure I could have done ministry without having had kids. But man, they made a difference. And I got to tell you, in those early days when I first went back just to preach part-time when they were still not even a year old, they were 8 months old when I went back to preaching. And I would take them to church, and we had two little services because the place was so small, and I was a breastfeeding mom, and so feeding the kids in between services and changing diapers and everything, and I got up for that second service that Sunday, and sure enough, you get it, I changed a diaper. I was like, okay, well, you're not all that. Look what's under your fingernails. And so Spirit laughs with us along the way and says, no, beloved, let's take a little course correction here. Let's help you realize that that tendency to go, wow, look at me, or, wow, don't look at me. It all gets handled so that we can do what we were meant to do, because it gives us strength and it gives us wings and it gives us all the tools that we need to go through everything, and it stretches us and it takes us through the obstacles, and it comes back to us when we feel tired and broken and dusty and says, I'm still here, and you're still who you are. Do what you can, where you can, with whoever you can, as often as you can. Do that. And then breathe and rest and get up and do it again tomorrow. And it's not a doing, really. It's a being, really. And it shines through whatever else you have going on in your life. Be real, be true, re-examine, be brave. Be brave. And extend your hand where you can. And beloved, if you don't identify anything else as a spiritual gift, know that one of the spiritual two of the spiritual gifts that you have already built in every single one of us is praying for others. Praying for others, letting go of the outcome, releasing them to God, knowing them in the highest regard, no matter who they are, no matter what they've done, no matter anything. That's one. The other one is to affirm people's personhood every place that you can. If it's just a glance that says, I see you. Tell you what, when you're in the grocery store, if you haven't done this already, see a baby coming in a cart, just make eye contact with that baby if you get a chance, and just affirm that they've got a whole world of possibility ahead of them and you see them. And I'll tell you, almost 100% of the time, that baby will smile at you. They haven't how to know yet. They haven't put on all the stuff that makes them think that they're less than they are, like happens to us in our human existence. So if you discover that as you're living out your divine purpose, you feel a little more innocent, a little fresher, that you have the ability to live in the paradox of being whatever age you are and this youth that you feel. If you are comfortable with that paradox, you are living a good life. Listen, Jesus, I don't know what he was doing till he turned 30, if we're to believe the timeline that's been presented. I don't know what he was doing. He's probably being a good carpenter with Joseph. Nazareth was a little tiny place. I don't know what he was doing before he was 30. But we know that approximately 3 years, bam, he changed the world. So if a divine human can change the world in 3 years, what a luxury that we have the span of our lifetimes to do the same. Isn't that nice? Why wouldn't we? Why would we not say, yes, I am God's expression. I am God in genes. I will tend the earth. I will look after the children. I will do my healing work. I will step into being a chaplain. I'll be a bendy pretzel for a long time. I will sit with my team of technical people and do my job in the most excellent way to touch an uncountable number of people out there watching online. I will make sure that that happens. That is a divine purpose, my friends. I will come and make music. I will make music. I will bring vibration into the world that did not exist before I made it. And you know, it doesn't have to be. You've done it 1,000 times, and it's always the same. It's not. It's you bringing vibration as you today. I read an article yesterday that said that it was a little archaeological thing about different animals that had died in the same place over time. And what remained were their bones. And what remained of some of those bones were that they had been made into flutes. And the musicologist that was writing this was talking about the mathematics of music, the physics of music, and what it does to us, how it resonates in us. Now, why would people who were focused on their survival, whose main jobs were to hunt and gather and keep the fire going and assure that there were people that would live after them. That was their main focus in life. Why would they pick up a bone and say, I think I'll make holes in this and see what happens if I blow into it? Why would they do that? Why would there be such an elevated function inserting itself into the lives of more primitive human beings? Because from the very beginning of our incarnation here on this earth as human beings, that divine purpose has been in every single one. Every tribe had a shaman. I don't know of any tribes who didn't find some way to make rhythm. Because there is something higher, and we've always known it. And so here we sit in our lives of comfort. I think we can go ahead and change the planet. Don't you? Amen. Okay, I'm done. Let's pray. I hope you feel a little lifted up right now, and I hope that you don't push it back down. I hope you're not hearing messages that you got way, way back that said you're not all that special. Doesn't matter. You just set those aside because that's old, old stuff. That's what doesn't matter. Right now, breathe into that ancient, timeless, right now spirit that allows you to be here, that brings breath into your body. That is right here always, walking beside you, never abandoning you. That spirit, its creative urge, needs you to express it, for it to be in its fullness. It needs you. Otherwise, you would not have been created. And when you walk into those moments of judgment, like we do as human beings, because we're human beings, and you say, I have no idea what that person's divine plan is. I have no idea what their purpose is. I don't see it. It doesn't matter. See them as God's own. And if all you can see in this life is their bad example, then they have already taught you. They have already sparked in you that which can live at a higher vibration, even as you bless them. So let your heart continue to soften right now, knowing that even now, the spirit of life inspires you in new ways to express your divine purpose. Know that that spirit never judges you as harshly as you judge yourself. Know that even when you're tired, when you're in the desert of your soul, Spirit is there. Spirit is there with sustenance and rest and encouragement. And as you breathe into this body, this beautiful machine, know that even now, that spirit of healing and life is flowing through you in every cell. It is animated by spirit. If your mind is cloudy and distracted, even now, spirit is working in and through you to calm, to guide, to clarify. And now, let your heart be grateful for all the blessings that you have acknowledged and all the ones that you've missed. And now, let your loving goodwill extend itself to everybody in this room, to everyone that is with us, online, out there in the world, to everyone that you love, and to all the people on earth. Your loving goodwill, and that is your prayer. To those of you joining us online, I extend the hands of fellowship and love right now, because we see you. Our eyes do not have to make contact with you for our hearts to see yours. And breathe again. A nice cleansing breath to let go of everything else. And because today we are precious and we've had a profound time with each other, will you bring your hands together? Pilgrims on the earth, walking in grace and beauty. And so it is, and so it is. Amen.